You know, we can have all the passion in the world, or we can have a clear purpose. You know, we know what our purpose is at our core, but if we don't have that direction and that roadmap, we're not really going to get very far with it. And then we're probably going to lose some of that motivation because nothing's happening with it. We want to be moving forward.
Welcome to the Beautifully Complex podcast, where I share insights and strategies on parenting neurodivergent kids straight from the trenches. I'm your host, Penny Williams. I'm a parenting coach, author, and mindset mama, honored to guide you on the journey of raising your atypical kid. Let's get started. Welcome back, everybody. I am really excited to have Dr. Melanie McNally with me. She has been here on the podcast before, and I think maybe one of the summits before as well. Always a pleasure. So much wisdom on teens and young adults, areas that many of us are struggling with now or maybe down the road soon. So we're going to talk a lot about motivation and helping our young adults find their place and what that journey looks like for them. But I want to start by just having you introduce yourself. Let everybody know who you are and what you do.
Thank you so much for having me. So yes, I'm Dr. Melanie McNally. I'm a clinical psychologist and brain coach, and I specialize in working with tweens, teens, and young adults in helping them build their self-awareness, their self-regulation, their interpersonal skills, and also really helping them increase their motivation. So breaking apart what motivation is and figuring out which area they're really struggling in so that we can get them feeling excited and energized about life. And I do that with, you know, one-on-one brain coaching. And then I also have some online courses and some books available too.
Awesome. Where should we start with this conversation? For me, I would say, I want to start with motivation, but I'm not sure that's really where we start. What would you say?
So one of the biggest issues I see with a lot of the young adults I work with is they will come in because they'll say their motivation is really low. You know, they'll tell me like, I don't want to do much. I don't want to go to college, or I don't want to work, and I'm just not motivated to do anything. And so what I always start with is like, okay, well, I know that's not true. I know you have some motivation to do something. Mm-hmm. Let's figure out first what it is that you're motivated to do and what that usually, so where we usually end up starting is with tech addiction, mm-hmm. because they are motivated to spend time on their devices. You know, they don't have any issue watching TikToks or YouTubes or scrolling mindlessly for hours. And so I feel like the tech area is a really good place to start, because we have to get that area in order a little bit, and then we can kind of build on it from there.
Mm-hmm. And how do we tease apart a tech addiction from maybe, you know, tech's a lot more stimulating, or this is the area where I shine and I do really well? How do we know where that line is?
So yes, and thank you for pointing that out, because when I use addiction here, I'm using it kind of loosely, Okay. You know, not necessarily like diagnostically, but where, you know, with a lot of the young adults, they will tell me, I'm spending way more time on my phone than I want to be. Mm. I am bored. I find that I'm bored, yet I'm still scrolling. You know, I don't want to be on my phone, but I don't know what else to do.
Right.
And so they are in that realm of where it's really unhealthy, you know, where it's not quite in line with what we would consider addiction, where maybe it's taking them away from, you know, friends, it's taking them away from school or work. That's when it kind of gets into that addictive territory. But they're in unhealthy territory because it's preventing them from engaging in life the way mm-hmm. that they want to engage. Like, they're not participating in life at the level that they want. And a lot of times they're aware of it. They don't like it. You know, and a lot of the teens and young adults I work with, they might admit it to me. They might not admit it to a parent.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's a different conversation and a different relationship. But they'll tell me, you know, I know. Like, I'm on it way too much, but I don't know what else to do.
Yeah. And where do you start with that? As I'm just sitting here thinking, I have a 21-year-old neurodivergent kid who spends a lot of time on screens and doesn't seem motivated to do some things, but they're also non-preferred tasks like cleaning your room and vacuuming the floors. And, you know, so I find it hard to figure out, because I don't consider that you would have to be motivated to do things. I think it's more about being able to engage with what's important, but also being able to figure out what it takes to do what you want to do, right? Because you're saying that your clients are often, they know that they are spending too much time on screens and they don't want to. They know that they're not meeting even their own goals, maybe. How do you make a turn from that?
Yeah. So first, you know, with that self-awareness piece is really important. So when a teen or young adult, you know, has the self-awareness of like, okay, I'm behaving in a way that I don't like, and I want to create a little bit of change here. That's always a really good starting point because they've bought in, you know, they're there right. for their own reason. It's not something that like somebody's making them do. And then, you know, a lot of times what I'll start with them is having them figure out some areas that they're curious about, you know, interest, things that they're just like interested in outside of their screens. So it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter if they're interested in, you know, Dungeons and Dragons or badminton or, you know, it really doesn't matter, but it's just getting them to create a list of things that they're curious about. And then having them start to spend time in those curiosities so that they are starting to just naturally spend less time on their phone. And at the same time, I like to educate them a little bit about what's happening in their brain, because when their brain is used to the dopamine that they're getting and just from the scrolling, when they're not getting that anymore, when they're doing something else, they're going to feel pulled back to their phone. They're going to feel that pull, and it's going to feel really uncomfortable to ignore it. And so I want them to lean into that discomfort, to know, you know, when you have your phone turned off because you are playing Dungeons and Dragons with your friends, you are going to want to check that phone. You're going to want to turn it on, and it's going to feel really uncomfortable. But that's your brain kind of like recalibrating itself in a way. And you want it to get used to this new normal of like not giving into that pull. And so while they're doing the curiosities, they're not on their phone, their brain starts to recalibrate a little bit, get used to like that not constant checking. And then once they've done that, then we can start to even implement some other things to help with just more of like the boring tasks that you mentioned earlier, like having to clean their room or do their laundry, where now they're in a place where it might be easier to, okay, let's make sure that your phone is turned off when you have to clean your room. You've just put a barrier between yourself and your phone so that it's not as easy now to get pulled into it, because their brain is in a little bit of a better position now to handle it.
Yeah. And I think too, like those boring tasks can be so much more difficult for neurodivergent individuals because you just don't have that same sort of on switch for your brain for importance. And so it can be really challenging. I love leaning into interests. I think that it's so powerful for our kids. And I think, you know, as parents, we feel like it needs to be purposeful or lead somewhere. But really, it can start without that, right? Like, we're just trying to change habits and have exploration. Could it lead somewhere else even better? Sure, maybe. But if it doesn't, that's okay too, right?
100%. Because essentially, so motivation is made up of three skill sets. Stephen Kotler has done a lot of research on motivation and drive and peak performance. And so he identified this model that really, I feel like resonates with a lot of teens and young adults. And so he talks about how motivation is made up of these three skill sets. We've got drive, we have grit, and we have goals. So drive is that internal push to do something. So that's like our passion, our purpose, you know, where we just naturally are motivated to do something. Grit is our ability to stick with something, even when it's boring or even when it's really challenging. And then goals are the roadmap, the detailed directions that are going to get us where we want to go. And so when we think of motivation as being made up of these three skill sets, what we can do is look and see, where is the teen or young adult? Where are they really struggling? And so once we have the tech under control, so they're not spending all their time on there, and then now we're starting to have them spend some time in like their passions and spend some time or in their curiosities, and then, you know, and hoping like, okay, maybe one of these curiosities is going to turn into something that you want to do more of and you want to spend a little more time on that. And then we can kind of build from there. But we also want to see, are they struggling with grit? You know, is it hard for them to stick with something long term? Or do they just not know how to clearly identify, create, and identify their goals? Because often teens and young adults, they don't know how to create goals. They don't know how to break them down into little steps. And so sometimes we can say, oh, okay, you actually have some things you're passionate about. You just don't know how to break that down and create that roadmap. And so we can do that. And then that can help increase motivation.
Yeah, I think a lot of parents are nodding their heads at the fact that our kids don't have grit. This is something that comes up a lot in the conversations that I have with parents. And it happens to my own kid as well. I call him a serial avoider, because any perceived discomfort, he like immediately puts up a wall, right? And so we've really been working on that avoidance. And it's difficult. It's difficult to teach the skills of being uncomfortable and getting through that when your brain works a little differently, right? Or if you're already have anxiety, I think it's doubly hard to sit in that discomfort.
100%. And a lot of times that avoidance, it becomes a safety behavior, especially, you know, you mentioned anxiety, where if I'm anxious to, you know, talk in front of large groups, which I am, then I'm going to avoid, you know, those situations where I might have to do it. And then it just kind of turns into this like safety behavior for me. So now I'm just always going to avoid those types of scenarios. And then that might impact job opportunities or promotions or other things in my life. So with, you know, teens and young adults, especially individuals with anxiety or any other type of ADHD or anything, autism, being on the spectrum, we want to think about really tiny baby steps.
Yes.
So if they're avoiding something, then we don't want to throw them into the deep end of the pool, but we want to think of like, okay, how can they kind of dip their toe into this to, you know, help them? And that's going to help a lot with motivation as well. Mm-hmm. Because motivation, it comes from action. You know, we have to take that little baby step first, and then the motivation starts to follow. And so it can be the same thing with just helping our brain tolerate that discomfort, just kind of slowly easing into that pool.
I'm thinking about my therapist, my own therapist for me, and trying to get healthier and having a lot of mental roadblocks to that and excuses and so forth. She told me, like, just stand on the elliptical. I don't expect you to move it. Just go put your feet on it and stand there. And starting this therapy and working with her over the last year, it has really opened my eyes to the fact that we all could use baby steps and taking things in smaller, more manageable pieces, right? And so if I don't feel great and that makes me not want to do the elliptical, I can just stand there and at least I'm not building this chasm of not doing it at all, which then gets me back stuck at the beginning, right? And I actually thought it was silly and I went home and I did my time on the elliptical. Like, I didn't just stand there, but I wouldn't have had she not given me permission to just like do what I could, right? And I think we forget that as parents. We want to go to the goal. We want our 20-something-year-old kid to be taking care of themselves, right? And you have to have different steps to get there. And it's okay if they're the teeniest things in the world.
Yes. And those steps are going to look different for everyone. Mm-hmm. Because I literally today was just on with a client before this with one of my teen clients who actually a young adult who's at college and is trying to get to the gym 3 days a week and is finding on certain mornings, it's really hard to get out of bed. And so we kind of did the same sort of thing where it's like, okay, what would be a baby step? If you can't go to the gym, what would still be something that would like be moving you in that direction? So for him, it's like still getting up at the time he would go to the gym. And what he's found is just by having that one, giving himself permission of like, okay, I don't actually have to go to the gym, but I'm going to get up early in the morning as though I am. And then he found like, okay, well, as long as I'm up, I might as well make my smoothie. Okay, as long as I've had my smoothie, I might as well go and just do a little bit of a workout. Okay, as long as I'm here, I might as well add to it. But when we break it into those little steps, it gives our brain little tiny things to focus on. And so it's not as overwhelming.
Yeah.
Because if we're focusing on like, okay, I have to go to the gym and do an hour long workout, my brain now is going to feel really overwhelmed. And then I might just kind of freeze or not want to do anything at all.
Yep. Been there, done that. Yep. It's amazing, really, when we learn about ourselves more deeply, we learn also about our kids and about being parents. I think there's a lot of wisdom in that when we really have some self-reflection, which is pretty amazing. So we have worked on the tech, we have leaned into curiosities, and then we've talked some about trying to develop grit. What's next after that?
Yeah. And, you know, and one thing too, that can also help with developing grit that we didn't talk about is, because I see this a lot across the board. It doesn't matter if it's my high achieving kids or my kids who are struggling a little bit more, but with the teens and young adults, grit really does seem to be lower for Gen Z.
Mm-hmm.
And I do want to tell parents though, research shows grit does tend to drop with each generation.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, as adults, we'll, you know, be like, oh, when I was a kid, I had to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to stare out the car window and now you guys can just watch movies. And that does tend to be true for each generation. Things get a little bit easier. So we do see grit tend to drop. But there are things that we can do to just get them to build their grit muscle and to get it a little bit stronger. And so that's going to be, you know, tolerating discomfort, doing things that are a little bit hard. That's where the baby steps really come in handy, because we think of it like, okay, this is a muscle that you're building. So if you're trying to stick with things that are hard and boring, you can practice this with like a board game. You know, maybe Monopoly is like for me, Monopoly is extremely painful. I cannot stand that game. And so that would be me building my grip muscle, like playing Monopoly.
Yeah.
And it's safe, you know, because it's not personal. Like if I don't win at Monopoly, it's not going to bother my self-worth or anything like that.
Right.
But it's giving me a chance to build that muscle. And so we can do the same thing with teens and young adults of like, okay, what's something that's kind of unpleasant for you, but we know like you can stick with it, you can do it. And even if it's hard or even if you're not good at it, it's not going to take a big blow to your self-confidence.
Yeah.
And encouraging them to build their muscle that way. And I find that when I explain that to teens and young adults, they are really great at figuring out what they can do. You know, what something, it might be reading a chapter in a book, like a boring book,
right,
you know, where they're like, okay, I can stick with it. I can get through it. And even if I don't retain all of it, it's okay. It's not that big a deal. Or I can, you know, sit and listen to my little sister tell me all about her latest friend drama. Like I can do that. And then they know that they're working on building that grip muscle.
I love that.
Once they've done that and they're working on it, that's when we can start to figure out some goals. Because that's the next layer of motivation, is that we need to have clear goals in order to have motivation. You know, we can have all the passion in the world, or we can have a clear purpose. You know, we know what our purpose is at our core. But if we don't have that direction and that roadmap, we're not really going to get very far with it. And then we're probably going to lose some of that motivation because nothing's happening with it.
Yeah.
We want to be moving forward. We want to be making progress on something. And so having, you know, figuring out the goals and figuring out the roadmap can help us do that.
Yeah. And how do we help to guide them to that? Because I think, I don't know if it's a generational thing. It's probably a little bit of a neurodivergent thing, but a lot of times our teens and young adults just aren't sure, right? And who really has it figured out at age 20 anyway? Like I'm doing something totally different than what I ever thought I would do, right? And that's just, I went where life led me. But I think they feel a lot of pressure to have it figured out and to be on the right path and finding that goal and being certain of it almost is a real hurdle. Do you see that too?
Yes. And in this area, I completely blame social media because they are seeing highlight reels.
Yep.
So they're seeing, you know, these curated versions of other people, and they're thinking that everyone else has it all figured out.
Right.
Everyone else knows what they're doing. Everyone else has this clear path. I don't. What's wrong with me? And the reality is that's not true. We know you, what you're seeing out there is curated and put together, and people don't have it all figured out. But when you're in your 20s and you're scrolling, it feels very, very real. So they absolutely struggle with that and feel like they need to. And I'm totally with you. When I was in my 20s, oh my gosh, I was definitely not on the in the direction I am now. So it's okay to like not have things figured out. And in fact, we actually want 20s to be like when we're exploring, like, you know, I cannot stand these high schools where they put kids on a career path in high school, like where they make them declare medical or whatever, like they make them declare a pathway, almost like a major, which is so ridiculous when they're in high school, because I think even when you're in your 20s, you still want to be figuring things out.
It's hard.
Yeah, because it's like over 80% of college students end up changing their major. So even what you think you want when you first start college, it's going to change.
Yeah.
And once you're out of college, it is very normal for people to completely change career pathways, for people to go back to school. Those are all very normal things, but our society kind of has this other image that we're putting out there, like, oh, nope, you need to know what you're going to do, and you need to pick a path, and you have to stick on it, and you can't deviate from it. And that's just not true.
Yeah.
That's why I like having them kind of figure out what they're curious about and passionate about. And even if we're creating goals around those things, it leaves a lot of wiggle room. Because if you're following a passion and something that you're, you know, really interested in and you enjoy, and you, even if you have goals, there's still a lot you can do with that, because it's about the passion. It's not about the end result.
Right. And all that really begs the question, why are we spending money on college at ages 18 through 23? Right. Because you're spending the money on supposed to be a career path, right? You have to declare a major and you have to have it all figured out. And then they get out in the real world and they're like, oh, the wind kind of comes out of their sails a lot of times. And it just seems to me that we need to give them more time to explore. And that's a conversation we have on this podcast all the time. Kids do not need to go to college right after high school. It's okay to take a break. It's okay to take a different path, whatever, you know, works for each individual. But I think the more we get into, especially this generation of young adults, even makes more sense that we are allowing that extra time.
I completely agree. I think that college can, you know, it can be great in some ways, you know, with teaching like self-discipline, and there's certain things that it can be really healthy for young adults. But then if they go in with this plan of like, okay, this is what I'm going to do, and they're laser focused on something, in a way, they're just setting themselves up for failure.
Yeah.
Because we know, you know, in most cases, it's not going to turn out that way. And you want to have some flexibility. It's good to go in with the idea of like, okay, I'm interested in this one area, but I could still go lots of different directions with it. And I can kind of figure it out as I go. Because as, you know, as humans too, that's generally how we learn best, is through doing.
Yep. Yeah, 100%. It's such a struggle. And I think parents are just really trying to find their own footing, because it's not the same to be in your 20s as it was when we, as their parents, were in our 20s. It's very, very, very different. And so it can be a real struggle. And I really appreciate you sharing a roadmap. You've given us a roadmap, where to start, what to do next. And that is so helpful. I want to just talk about your book that you have out and the one that's coming out soon. so that people know how they might be able to learn more from you. And then we'll wrap up.
Yes. So I have a book out currently. It's called The Emotionally Intelligent Teen. And so it's for teens and young adults, and it's to help them build the skills of emotional intelligence. So helping them build self-awareness, self-regulation, and interpersonal skills. Because even as we were talking about college and jobs, one of the things the World Economic Forum, when they did their latest data report, they found that employers are more concerned with an employee's emotional intelligence. That was in like the top five of in-demand skills. Like that was above technical skills. So they really want to hire people who are aware, like who have that self-awareness, who have self-regulation, who have good interpersonal skills. So my book that's out now is on that. And then I have a book coming out September 1st, and that's for parents of teens and young adults. And it's called Raising Motivated Teens. And that's really to help parents unlock their child's potential. It's a guide, and I take parents through some of what we talked about today with drive, grit, and goals, and you know, really dive deep into those areas.
Yeah. It's such a challenging time for us to navigate as parents, teens, and young adults. You know, we still want to be protective. They want to be independent. They don't want to need us, but they kind of still need, you know. And it's just, it can be a real challenge. So I appreciate so much the work that you're doing and just helping us to take it a little easier and to be kind to ourselves and to our kids on the journey that they're on.
Yes, it's definitely a different time to be a parent. I'm not a parent myself, but I've worked specifically with adolescents since 2013. Mm-hmm. And I have seen such a shift in the way teens and young adults show up in the world, the way they engage with the world, the way parents now parent. So even in, you know, the last 11 years, I've seen quite a big shift. And I know it's a lot for parents to keep up with. So, you know, absolutely, when parents find like communities and can get support from one another and can practice that self-compassion, because, you know, you really are figuring out a lot of this stuff on your own. Parents can always reach out to me too through my website, which is destinationyou.net. So it's destinationyou.net. And you can find different resources. I've got free resources on there, and you can always, you know, reach out to me directly there too.
Yeah, we'll link that up in the show notes for this episode, which are at parentingadhdandautism.com/256 for episode 256. And again, I just want to thank you. I'm so thankful for you and the work that you're doing and helping our teens and young adults. And with that, we'll end. I will see everybody next time.
Thanks for joining me on the Beautifully Complex podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and share. And don't forget to check out my online courses and parent coaching at parentingadhdandautism.com and at thebehaviorrevolution.com.